Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Looking for something scary, morbid, frighteningly insane?
Get out!
Every form of horror, from ghosts, cryptids, and curses, to deals with the devil, giant insects, and more.
Go.
Join us at Haunted Tales, our weekly horror anthology series. And let me tell you a story.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Do you like cracking into curious creatures? Perhaps you ponder the paranormal. Have you ever got a hankering for the haunted? Ever entertained the existence of extraterrestrials? Or have you ever just wanted to hear genuine encounters of any kind? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, then Cryptids, Creeps, and Conspiracy Podcast is right up your alley. So grab your sense of humor and open your mind as we take a journey to uncover the mysteries behind kooky critters, spooky specters, enigmatic entities, and the controversial conspiracies that surround them. Buckle up, because we're going to have a good time.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us yet again for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode. How are you today, Mom?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited for the drink. I'll say that. I'm not excited for the story that I'm about to tell you, but what story do you have for us today?
I have another murder story of a woman who dies, but this is interesting because it's a poisoning. And we don't do a lot of poisonings, I feel like.
I think I've done most of the poisonings.
I think you might have, yeah.
Graham Bell or whatever that guy's name was. Anyways.
Yeah.
I'm going to be talking about the Knights of the Crystal Blade.
Oh, that's interesting sounding.
This is a fairly recent story that I didn't know until I watched a certain YouTube video called it's called Cops Discover Missing Kids Hidden on Predator's Compound. The channel Explore With Us, and it's a 1 hour and 42 minute video includes like body cam interrogation footage. It's like I just wanted to shout them out at the very beginning because I would have never heard of this before unless I saw this, and they did so much work just like in the editing alone. I just had to give them a shout out. But
yeah.
So, to go with the story of the Knights of the Crystal Blade, I have the Southern Knight recipe. That's the cocktail that I have today. So, right on the money with it, but
yes. It
sounds so good. 2 ounces of bourbon, 1 ounce of lemon juice, 1/2 ounce of strawberry syrup, and top with ginger beer. Combine bourbon, lemon juice, strawberry syrup, and 1 cup of ice into a shaker. Shake to dilute and then chill mixture. Strain into a serving glass with a garnish of ginger, if you'd like. A garnish with strawberry and top with ginger beer. So.
Okay.
I think this is going to be a really good, like, 4th of July cocktail.
Yeah. Oh. 4th of July cocktail. That should be one of our names.
That's good. I like it. It's a little bitter, I think. If you did like 1 ounce of strawberry syrup, I think it would be even better. But I would agree. So I think it needs more strawberry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good.
I could have put less ginger beer in too.
It also depends on the glass. Like some, you could use a pint glass, or you could use a Collins or whatever they call it.
But I used a Collins glass, and I think it would be better if it. I put maybe an ounce of ginger beer in there.
I used a pint glass, but I filled it up not all the way. It's like 3/4 of the way. So very ginger beery.
Yeah.
What kind of ginger beer did you use?
Fever Tree.
Fever Tree is more subtle, I feel, than Cock and Bull. I could only find Cock and Bull.
Yes. Yes,
Cock and
I would agree with that.
Very spicy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anyways, let's get into this story. And I would just recommend anyone listening to this one, just go ahead and skip to Mom's part. You can, once you hear the brutal sound clip playing, just you can listen from that point. But this is not a great story.
Okay. Well, it's you said it involved kids and
yeah,
being held captive. That right there is just bad.
Not necessarily held captive, but we'll get into that.
Oh.
So.
Oh, okay.
What started out as a kidnapping from a biological father turned much darker once the real truth was discovered. So there's a lot of quote-unquote kidnappings where there's a custody battle and
one
parent takes a kid and it's technically kidnapping, but.
Right, because they don't have.
I don't believe that's kidnapping. That's a different. They should come up with a new term for that.
That's like, true. There should be
if
a
you're
different
with
term.
Kidnapping. When I think of kidnapping, I think of
stranger,
a guy in a white van picking a kid up. But if it's if you're with your dad and your dad is getting in a fight with your mom and they're divorced, and it's like, oh, I just kept
it's
my
shitty.
Kid a day extra, and technically that's kidnapping. But like,
yeah.
There should be a new name for that.
I get what you're saying.
But anyway, so it started out as a biological father kidnapping his kids turned much darker once the truth was discovered. In December 2017, Micah Colthorpe approached police about a wellness check on her ex-husband, John, and their 4 children and John's parents. When Micah tried calling the phones of her ex-husband's family, she became suspicious when she heard that all the phones had been disconnected. So
of a family, not just one person,
the whole family.
Oh,
John and John's parents. This is when she contacted police. Police checked out John's parents' house and discovered that the family wasn't there. After contacting John's sister, they got a spare key to the house and checked it out. Inside the house was a very strange sight. All the furniture was missing. Garbage lay down on the floor. However, every single electronic device, including phones, TVs, and computers, were left behind. So they took all the beds, all the couches, all the furniture out of the house, left garbage on the floor, left the TVs, left everything that was electronic there.
Okay.
This raised some red flags, so police started investigating. Micah and John were still married when she approached police, but after some guidance, she filed for divorce and won full custody of their children over a month after she had seen her children last. So,
okay. She didn't have custody at the time.
No. So they were still married at the time.
Okay.
I'll get into kind of what happened with that a little bit, but John kind of went. John took the kids, went to his parents' house, and that was about a month before she filed for divorce and won full custody of the kids.
Were they in a good relationship at the time? Was she blindsided when he disappeared with the kids?
It wasn't a great relationship. They had a lot of money issues. Okay. Because he had like a massive spending issue and would buy everything he wanted, but like they weren't living that well. And so they had to move back home to live with his parents and stuff. So that's kind of So they had a fairly regular life when they first got married, but when they had kids, John changed. John was Mormon, and once his kids were born, he started voicing his concerns about their interactions with people outside of the religion, eventually keeping them almost entirely inside. John was diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder. He eventually quit his job and lied to Micah that he was fired. So they were already struggling with money, and he quit his job and said that he was fired.
Yeah.
Okay. He ended up taking the kid shortly after this and disappearing to his parents' house. When Micah came home and no one was there, she called his work, and that's when he discovered, or that's when she discovered that he had quit and he wasn't fired. He was a, like a really good employee there, and they're like, oh, we were so sad when he quit. Like we,
and it's usually the other way around. When someone gets fired, then they lie and say they quit. It's not, I don't think I've ever heard that version in that order. Like, I quit my job and told everyone I was fired. That's not typically how that goes.
He told his wife that he, it just, this guy.
Yeah.
So, after Micah had discovered this, she went to the courts, filed for divorce, and was granted full custody. And so police officers waited outside of his John's parents' home where they were all last seen by neighbors and stuff, and hoping someone would come by. And after a few days of waiting, John was spotted back at the home with his friend, Samuel Schaefer.
Okay.
The police asked why he was there. John said, I'm here to pick up Micah's death certificate. The kid's mother's. Police knew something was up when he said this because Micah was alive. They were talking with Micah when he said this. So police asked John where the kids were and he refused to answer. So he was arrested. However, police had nothing to arrest Samuel with, so they let him go. Police were able to locate John's parents' cars at a compound in a rural area nearby. The compound consisted of various shipping containers, tents, and garbage piles. The compound had no running water, electricity, or gas hookups, and the shipping containers were used as storage and living quarters.
Nothing good is in a shipping container.
This is like Timu Waco, is what I'm basically explaining.
If you got Waco from Tina. Cute.
Yeah. So the shipping containers were used as storage and living quarters. Police raided the compound in December and were horrified. The living quarters were littered with garbage and dirt, so they just had piles of boxes, like cardboard boxes, filling all the shipping containers that they were living in. There's like sleeping bags on the floor. There's no power. There's no water. There's just water bottles and like John had also used his parents' money to buy a brand, like I think it was a 2016 Suburban.
Where's his parents, by the way? Are they there?
On the compound.
Okay.
I'll get into that, but.
Okay.
So John, they're living in shipping containers that are formed like in a U shape to kind of make like a courtyard. But they're shipping containers. Like, you've seen online of shipping containers with, like, bathroom, like, people turn it into tiny homes. This is just a shipping container full of garbage and sleeping bags.
I have seen some really beautiful homes made from shipping containers but those have been renovated and plumbed and had electricity put to them.
I've cut a lot of the horrific stuff out of this. But if video that I mentioned, it's you can listen to just how bad it is and see because it's all body cam footage.
Body cam.
It's real footage of the thing, and it's like just shipping containers full of trash, and then like there's a there's a hole in the trash where there's like a sleeping bag with kids' toys on it and stuff. And so anyways, the living quarters were littered with garbage and dirt, as well as kids' toys, clothes, and personal items. During the raid, John's parents were located, as well as John's two sons. The boys were filthy and covered in tree sap. The police were also, they also recovered a manifesto. That's what I'm calling it. I don't really know
always
what the word
is. Always a manifesto.
It's like a Bible for them, basically, but manifesto is the better word. John and Samuel had started a new religion, or also known as a cult, called the Knights of the Crystal Blade. The religion was based around the Mormon philosophy. However, it included Norse and Roman gods. John was the leader of the cult and the creator of the manifesto, while Samuel was supposedly the seer.
Of course, he was. You gotta have somebody who knows everything.
And someone to translate it. That's, yeah. But
yes.
The two had visions of an upcoming The two had visions of an upcoming apocalypse, which is where their religion was based. So it was a doomsday cult, basically.
Always. Always.
Once police knew they were dealing with a cult, they put on an Amber Alert for the four missing children. So Micah and John's kids, they had four kids. Mm-hmm. Their two sons were missing, but their two daughters were missing. Samuel had two daughters as well. So there's four missing.
Okay.
Only the two boys were found. So there's
six
four
kids
missing
total.
Yeah.
Four missing. Okay.
Some police stayed to continue the search after the raid. They were already at the compound, so they're once they knew there was kids missing, they just stayed there to keep looking. So they continued to search the grounds while others started interviewing John's parents as well as John's ex-wife, Micah. John's parents were very evasive in questioning but started to paint a horrifying picture. Just, I know this, it's a bad story, but this is also bizarre. No one dies. Just letting you guys know from now. Like,
that's good.
It's still horrifying, but no one dies. But
right.
The parents started to describe what had transpired in the weeks since the kids had gone missing. Their son, John, had written this manifesto and would describe the end of the world. He and Samuel fully believed in this, and when John quit his job and took the kids, he started to indoctrinate his parents. So his parents were very religious, and so they kind of
just trusted everything.
It blows my mind,
he said.
But they just, yeah, it blows my mind, but yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they just kind
of. Do you have an age of the parents? An age of the people?
They look about 65, between 55 and 65, if I had to guess.
Okay. I was just curious because, you know,
they're
older
full
folks
adults.
In this day and age are
they're
but I feel like people in their 70s and 80s are, no, I'm not saying they're dumb, well, but they're easily susceptible to.
No, these
a fake story.
In the interrogations, they showed the entire interrogation with the parents, and the parents are like, "We're not going to get arrested for this, right? We're not involved in this, right?" And so they kept like, they're plenty coherent enough. They know something wrong was happening, and they're culpable. But
okay,
so he and Samuel, they had convinced John's parents to leave with them, and they fully believed in this end of the world conspiracy. So he had convinced them to use their retirement and social security money to purchase all these things, including the Suburban, the land, all the shipping containers and stuff, at the compound. He convinced them to move out to the compound and start prepping for the end of the world with John, his kids, Samuel, and Samuel's two daughters. John made his parents do as he wished, as well as fund the entire endeavor using their retirement funds, food stamps, and maxing out all their credit cards.
Wow.
While the parents' interrogation continued, only two of the six children had been found, so police kept searching the compound. While this was happening, about a day later, after the raid had happened, police were called to speak with a suspicious man, and this is when they spotted Samuel. So they had already come in contact with him when they arrested John at the parents' house.
But
so
they didn't have anything to pick him up.
Yeah, but now that there's missing children, they were able to detain him. But Sam was immediately detained and brought in and into the command center where they were kind of launching the raid from. On the way there, he asked police officers driving the car, "Did you find the four girls?" "The two girls that were wrapped up in a barrel in the back of the junkyard near the red storage bins."
What?
And he said this, it shows the camera from the back of the cop car, and he says it just as casually as I did.
Right.
"You're arrested," and he's like, "Did you find the girls?" No concern at all. But the cop that was driving Samuel to the compound radioed to the cops and let them know that they're looking for two blue barrels with girls in them. Several cops were able to locate the blue barrels and found two girls and two separate barrels, John's oldest daughter and Samuel's youngest daughter, age 4.
You said nobody died.
Nobody died. The barrels had been padded with foam and blankets to keep the kids warm. A loaded rifle was laid on the ground next to them. They were both alive, and when asked where the other two girls were, the older girl said they were in the red container far away.
What?
Yeah. So keep in mind, the compound is loaded. Like, there's three to five red shipping containers. And so when they heard red container far away, all the cops start looking through
all
these containers.
They're thinking a shipping container.
Yeah. Yeah. The compound had tons of these containers, but no one was inside of them. And just to mention, it was 23 degrees the night before they had been found. So they had been in there for almost a full day. Both were alive.
In a barrel.
Yes, a blue plastic barrel.
Like a barrel sized barrel?
The blue plastic barrels that you see in like crime shows where they dissolve bodies in, that's the barrel that they were in. But it just had a piece of like foam, like, you know, the foam mattresses you get from the store.
I've never heard of a live person in a barrel.
Neither have I until this. And so. So while speaking with police, the two girls kept asking for Samuel, not Dad. They wouldn't call him Dad. They kept asking, "Where's Samuel at? Where's Samuel at?"
But Samuel's their dad, but they're not referring to him as Dad.
Samuel's youngest daughter.
These are Samuel's.
John's oldest
and John's,
daughter.
Okay, that's right. You said that. Okay.
But John's oldest daughter kept asking, "Where's Samuel at? Where's Samuel at?"
Okay.
We'll talk about that. But meanwhile, Samuel was being questioned about the other two girls. He kept apologizing, saying he was coming back for the girls in the barrel, but kept getting scared, thinking that someone was following him. Samuel kept asking for a lawyer and dodging questions, saying that the other two girls were down south, but wouldn't say where till the sheriff promised him that the kids wouldn't be returned to Micah. He kept like saying like, "Oh, I was told not to say this to cops, but the CPS system sucks. So I want to make sure they go home to their parents, to Micah, the kid's daughter," before he would say anything. He's like, "Wow. Yeah, they're down south, but, and then the cops would be like, "Where?" And he's like, I just want to make sure they don't go to CPS. I want to make sure they go to their mom." But eventually, he told them where they were. Once the sheriff promised him this, Samuel explained that he had walked his oldest daughter and John's youngest daughter to a friend's property. So in the barrel is Samuel is carrying his oldest and John's youngest.
Okay. Yes.
I think I'm tracking. Super confusing, but
yeah.
So Samuel carried this kid's miles to his friend's home and knocked on the door. The friend didn't answer, and so Samuel put the kids in a storage shed at the back of the property with some blankets. Keep in mind, 28 degrees outside.
Holy cow.
Police rushed to the house and found the last two missing girls. All kids were alive, but severely dehydrated, malnourished, hypothermic, and one girl needed to be hospitalized, but survived without injuries. Samuel was brought in for questioning, and things began to get even weirder.
I don't know how they could.
He began to explain a story and started explaining their religion. Along with the doomsday prophecy, they also betrothed their oldest daughter to each other. Do you know what betrothed means?
Each other?
Yes. So Samuel said, here, have my oldest daughter.
Gross.
Yeah. And so supposedly in their manifesto, they were to sponsor, I guess, and teach each other's daughters. And then once they turned 18, they had their hand in marriage.
Nope.
So Samuel gave his 7-year-old daughter to John. John gave his 8-year-old daughter to Samuel. John's two sons were separated.
I'm gonna punch these guys in the face.
And placed with the grandparents because John considered them competition.
Ew.
His own sons.
Ew.
John stayed in the tent.
Yeah, because that's age appropriate at least.
John stayed in a tent with Samuel's daughters, and Samuel stayed in a tent with John's daughters. John's parents said they never witnessed any abuse going on, but they were highly suspicious of them. And how would you not be? You're 60 years old, or however the fuck they old they were. Like,
Oh my God. There are no humans involved in this story except those children.
Sam and John would threaten to kill anyone if they left the compound and regularly controlled food and water to punish people. They would also take John's two sons and lead them miles into the wood, into the woods and leave them to make their own way home to prove that they were resourceful. These are like 6 and 5-year-olds. Like,
I hate these bastards.
But John and Samuel weren't the only prospects. John had posted his beliefs online, and a man named Robert Rowe approached him through Facebook. After some back and forth, Robert flew to Utah to meet with Samuel and John, where he stayed on their compound for 3 days. After hearing John and Samuel's preach about their religion, Robert showed disinterest in the religion, and this is when they threatened to kill him.
Oh my, of course they did.
Robert also claimed that they had planned to lure their wives to the woods and kill them so they could have full legal rights to the children. They also supposedly forced Robert to spend the night with John's 4-year-old daughter.
Ew!
With all the evidence gathered, Samuel was charged with 2 counts of child sodomy, child bigamy, obstruction of justice, and lewdness with the child. He pled guilty, but later redacted, saying that his lawyer pressured him, but the judge didn't go for that. He just made him plead guilty. So John was charged with 1 count of child sodomy, 1 count of child bigamy, obstruction of justice, lewdness with a child. John was convinced his actions were sanctioned by having been sent by God to promote child marriages and asked to be his own attorney. He pled guilty and both were charged with 26 years to life. John's parents were also convicted, sentenced to 36 months of probation and $25,000 in restitution.
Wow.
Yeah. And I would recommend if you, I shouldn't say recommend, but if you want to learn more about this, check out that video I mentioned. I'll have mom tag it.
It'll be in our show notes. If you want the link and you want to watch it'll be in our show notes.
There's a lot of stuff that I cut out that was really disgusting. So
I appreciate that because that was gross enough.
There's a lot of, because they use all of, like, the interrogation, actual photos from the crime scene, real dash cam. The whole thing is, like, real life stuff. So it's, like, kind of interesting to watch. It's not like a – because a lot of true crime documentaries are, like, they sit down with the dog's babysitter's cousin. And it's, like, this is, like, real
– right. The real legit footage. Stuff.
Yeah.
I want to give a medal to anyone who had to talk to these people and not murder them. Because if I had to sit across the table from somebody who, in a former job of mine, I did have to sit across the table from people who did horrific things to children, and I had to have a civil conversation with them. And it was the worst job I'd ever had. I don't know how I didn't just jump across the table and choke somebody out. But the fact that these two dirtbags are still breathing after all of that just amazes me, because they should not be. Barf.
It's just an awful fucking story. And I came across it on YouTube, and I watched it, and I was like, oh my God. Like, when you
might
look it
need
up,
to check your algorithms and go watch a bunch of fucking cat videos on YouTube if it's sending you shit like that.
Oh, I do. But this is, I like this channel because I can't stand true crime documentaries where they talk to every fucking.
Same. Yeah. I'm the same way.
Oh.
That's why I don't watch a lot of them. What?
So I clicked on the channel just so I could see, like, other stuff. But I guess they had, like, a little thing on YouTube where they just autoplayed. And I thought someone was talking to you in your.
Oh.
Because, like, I heard, like, an echo. It sounded like someone came in, but you were frozen. So I was like, who the fuck is talking to you right now? But it was the YouTube.
Oh, no.
Okay. I'll cut that part out, but
okay.
Yeah, fucking
awful.
Well,
I hated that story. That was awful.
Yeah. I'm glad all the kids lived. That nothing.
Yes. I
mean, I'm not going to say nothing bad happened to them, but.
Right. Nobody died. Like you said, that is a good thing. Nobody died, but still bad things happened. And I still am curious to know how old those parents were to be gullible enough to buy into some ridiculous story that their son was telling them.
Had to be 55 plus, probably.
Honestly, because, and I only say that because, like, I think about how gullible my parents, how gullible my mom is. You know, she's 84 years old, and if you told her the sky was pink at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, she would be like, oh yes, I see it's pink. You know, she just is whatever. But I feel like at one point you have to be questioning when your adult son says, God told me to abuse children. I'd be like, dude, you're
God
going
told
to
me
a
that
hospital.
We need to live in a shipping container with no running water or fucking power.
Exactly.
And you need to watch my children.
Right. Exactly. Forget about the child endangerment stuff. If you came
leaving
to
my
me
house and live in a shipping
and
container,
said,
fuck you, bitch.
We're going to live in a shipping container with no electricity and no running water, and we're going to leave all of our electronic devices. I'd be like, son, we're going to a mental institution and we're checking you in because something's wrong with your brain.
If the shipping container had power and water, maybe I'm down. But
that'd be different. if it was a shipping container renovated into a nice home.
No,
that's different.
Pictures. It looks like someone threw a bunch of garbage in there. Ugh.
That's nasty. Nope, I'm not buying that. Okay, we're going to talk about my poisoning story now. Angela Prey was born April 15th, 1979 in Kansas, and she typically went by the nickname Ange. She was born into a large family with 9 siblings. The family was strong in their religious faith, and Angela carried that into her adult life. She was loved by those that knew her, and she was described as energetic with a quick wit. She enjoyed researching genealogy and did so for herself and others. Angela was active in her church and was known for always showing up to anything she was invited to. If it was a birthday party, if it was a wedding, if it was an anniversary party, if somebody said you should come to this, she would show up. So everybody counted on her to, she was always there. She enjoyed outdoor activities and was a huge animal lover. What's that?
I'm the opposite. I don't show up to anything I'm invited to.
That's not true. You are just choosy like I am. Like, I have to evaluate, like, do I like these people enough? Like, I like the people that invited me, obviously we're friends, but who else is going to be there and how long am I expected to be there for? See, then I have to weigh that out.
I'm a proponent of the 8-day week. We do 3 days off, 5 days on. We just add an extra weekend day. I would do so much more if I had an extra weekend day. 2 days just chilling is perfect. But if I had an extra day to do extra stuff?
I think it should be a 4-day work week, which is what I currently do. And I am trying to come up with a really good rationale as to why I should turn that into a 3-day work week and a 4-day weekend. And I don't have a good excuse yet.
Fair enough. I like the paycheck of a 5-day week, but just because some dude fucking thousands of years ago decided we should have a 7-day week, fuck that guy.
And some asshole said we need to work 5 of those days
and just have 2 days off. Time too. Fuck daylight saving times.
Yes. All of them. I hate all of those things. Okay, let's get back to my story. Angela met James Craig in the 1990s. Jim was born February 11th, 1978. The couple were married in December of 99. They would go on to have 6 children together, and Angela was a devoted mother. The couple and their family moved to Denver, Colorado area in 2008, where Jim started a dental practice. For some time, Angela worked in the practice as well. She was the office manager there. So they worked together pretty much all day and then, you know. Mm-hmm. Which I think is great when couples can do that. I think your dad and I would murder each other if we did
that. You would have nothing to talk to after work. It's like you talked about everything at work. So then... you have nothing to talk about.
Yes. Other employees in the office noted that the couple were playful and seemed to get along well with each other. Angela and her husband had a good routine. They would often work out together, and Jim would make Angela protein shakes to fuel their workouts. Some employees commented that even seemed like the perfect couple.
He's going to poison the protein shakes. I already know.
Yes.
Was basically, it anthrax or?
Nope.
Let me guess.
We'll get there. It's
glass shards.
It's a couple things. It's a couple things.
He making potions?
Basically, yeah. He's trying to find the fastest route to being single, essentially. Being a dentist and running an office isn't all it's cracked up to be. Because it's really expensive to do that. Although from the outside, the dental practice seemed to be thriving financially, Jim was forced to file bankruptcy in 2020.
Okay.
By 2022.
I would like to argue that it's hard to run a dental practice and make money. That's bullshit.
I think it depends on if you're a good business person and you're
wise with your financial stuff, but I know what you're saying because you go to the dentist and it's not cheap.
I have the inside scoop. Yeah, I work at a dental lab. I know. We charge. Okay, so I'm not saying all dentists, but this is the basic practice. You go to the dentist, you need a new crown. We charge, what, $250 for a crown? They charge you $2,500. They're making 10 right. times profit on what
However,
we're
think
you.
About this. Think about this. You go to a dentist office, and even just a run-of-the-mill dentist, say it's a small practice. You've got your dentist, you've got an office manager, you have at least one dental hygienist, usually two or three. Let's see, the last dentist I was at, they had an office manager, they had two dental assistants and two hygienists. But the equipment, you've got an x-ray in every room. You've got those chairs can't be cheap. You've got the plumbing that goes to them to be able to rinse your mouth out and then suction it out. The equipment itself has got to be a bloody fortune. So they're charging these exorbitant amounts of $2,500 versus $250 for a crown. It's to pay back that loan that they took out to buy all of that equipment for their office.
So one thing is my coworker's daughter, she had some teeth issues and she ended up needing a night guard, which is like a kind of like a teeth grinding retainer, yeah. basically. Like
right.
you put it in and at night you don't grind your teeth. We charge, I think it's $150 for those. It's literally just like we 3D print a little retainer. And after everything, the dentist was going to charge her $3,000. And it's like, wow. for literally all they do, they take a scan, a 3D scan. They use their little 3D laser scanner. And then we 3D print something. And it's like $150 to $3,000. That's.
How
that is
expensive
highway robbery.
It is, but how expensive do you think that 3D scanner is for them to get that scan?
But
and how they're not
off,
doing that to like, every person. They're
they
doing
are,
that
they
for
do.
One person a Most, day. That is no, so, maybe.
So like if they're like a lot of offices, if they do manual impressions, they just stick with that. If they do the 3D ones, they do. I'm shipping out like 8 3D things for this one doctor a day. So it's like that's been paid off.
Wow.
That's been paid off 4 years ago. And so they're still charging the same amount. So that's.
Because you can.
It's highway robbery. It's because you can.
I totally. I 100% agree with like, you it, that. The markup is ridiculous.
But I agree.
But
if you went to school for 10 years or whatever you need for your dental thing, like,
yeah,
might as well just. But then again, it's. I don't know. I have a lot of thoughts on this. We're not going to get political on this. Let's just keep. Let's go back to your story.
It's a slippery slope for sure financially. In 2022, he was in financial trouble again, or maybe still. And he decided to bring on a business partner. His business partner was Ryan Redfern. Redfern and Jim had been in dental school together, and they had been friends ever since. In the end of February 2023, Jim traveled to Las Vegas for a dental conference. While he was at the conference, everything back home was basically going on as normal, but not long after Jim returned, his wife Angela started getting sick. She was having headaches, dizziness, nausea, and having difficulty with her vision. All bad things that would make you go, "What's wrong with me?" So she went to the hospital, but doctors were unable to determine what the cause of her illness was. over the course of a week and a half, Angela's symptoms came and they came and went, but they didn't entirely go away. They just got a little bit better and then they got worse again. Towards the end of that week and a half, Angela got really bad. She made 3 total trips to the hospital in that time period, and doctors were no closer to figuring out what was wrong with her and what her diagnosis could be. The whole time, Jim was supportive. He was texting her. They were texting each other, and he was saying he loved her and he hoped that she would feel better soon and all of those things. He even brought her some food while she was laying in the hospital bed, because who doesn't hate hospital food? I mean, it's atrocious. Early on in her illness, she texted Jim saying that she felt drugged. His response was to say that he didn't drug her. But what doctors didn't know was that he had done it in the past.
Hey, oh, I feel drugged. Definitely wasn't me. That implicates you.
Right. And when she said, I feel drugged, his response was, considering our history, I can understand that you might feel triggered by that. Their history was that in the previous years, he had drugged her. And this was the story behind that drugging. He was depressed. And he was contemplating taking his own life. But he was worried. He was worried that Angela would intervene in his attempt and stop him or call for assistance. So the solution was to drug her so that she would be incapacitated and couldn't stop him or call for help. But
it's fucking stupid.
He didn't actually carry on with the rest of the plan, which was to take his own life. So I don't, that's a weird justification for drugging your wife. I don't know.
It's very confusing.
It's yes. On March 15th, 2023, Angela's symptoms had severely increased and she was admitted to the hospital. In the early afternoon, she experienced a seizure and was ultimately placed on life support. She did not recover, and 3 days later, she was removed from life support. Now doctors needed to discover what actually killed her. The first clue came from Jim's office. In the days leading up to Angela's last and most severe episode of sickness, Jim told one of the staff that he was expecting a private package in the mail and instructed her not to open it. The package arrived a few days later, but a different staff member opened it, not knowing that Jim had said, don't do that. The package contained potassium cyanide, which, incidentally, dentists don't ever need. He was claiming that he had to do some special dental surgery and he needed potassium cyanide to assist with the surgery. And everybody's like, that's bullshit. Nobody needs that.
Is that the cyanide that they use in like James Bond to like knock people out?
Cyanide kills people. That's what it's used for.
It knocks them out, right?
Well, in this case, it killed her. The staff alerted the business partner, Ryan, and told him, hey, your business partner just had cyanide delivered to the office. Ryan confronted Jim, and initially, Jim denied that there was poison in the box, but then relented, claiming that Angela had told him, okay, you thought the drug your wife so you can kill yourself story was far-fetched? Check this one out. He said he ordered cyanide because Angela told him to order it because she wanted to take her own life. And she was playing chicken. It was a game of chicken to keep
was he
him.
Dr. Kevorkian? What?
So follow this logic. It doesn't, you can't track it. He said he ordered it because Angela told him she wanted to commit suicide. And it was a game of chicken to prevent him from leaving her and divorcing her.
That
so
make
if
any
you
sense.
Think, nope, it doesn't. Again, you don't. I don't know where you connect these roads, but they don't meet each other anywhere. Nope, you can't even tunnel through the earth to the other side and have these two things meet up. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
But that was his story. Jim asked Ryan not to talk to the police about the cyanide, basically saying, you don't have to tell anybody about this. It has nothing to do with why she died. And Ryan is like, you're full of shit. So Ryan told the hospital staff that he suspected Angela had been poisoned. Of course, at that point, it was already too late. She had passed, but hospital staff were unable to determine that. They were able to determine that her blood not only contained cyanide, but also tetrahydrazoline or something along that line. Basically, it's the ingredient found in some eye drops. Which I don't know if you've heard, but there's rumors out there that eye drops can make people really sick, or possibly even like if you put it in their drink or something, it's bad news. Up. Yeah, bad stuff happens.
Or diarrhea. I mean, I've heard
bad
a lot
stuff.
Of stories
not,
of people
not
using
good
it
things.
To make people throw up or shit themselves. So.
Yeah, I don't want either of those two things. There was no logical explanation as to why she would have either of those things in her system other than she had been intentionally poisoned. And oddly enough, doctors were able to show that her levels of cyanide increased over the course of her hospital stay, which meant that she had gotten more of the cyanide while she was in the hospital. So that time that he brought her food in the hospital, probably poisoned. Which is ballsy.
Cyanide.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jim also told her family that he didn't want to put her body through an autopsy, but thankfully one was done anyway. The day after she was removed from life support, Jim was arrested for her murder. During the investigation, law enforcement discovered that Jim had been having at least an emotional affair with a woman that he met at the dental conference in Las Vegas. Remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but not this time. They had been communicating by phone and text. Jim had lied to this woman, claiming that he was already working through the divorce process with his wife, which he was not. They were still married and living together and cohabitating and all of the things. Not only was he communicating with the woman, but he had paid for her to fly to Colorado from Texas.
Ooh.
Investigators were able to determine that the woman was unaware that Jim was behind his wife's illness, and she was basically ruled out as a suspect, so she wasn't in on any of it. But she was not the only woman that he had been cheating with. Prior to his trip to Vegas, he had had another mistress, and had communicated an interest in finding someone to kill his wife. The planning never panned out with this woman, and their relationship ended before he went to Vegas. In search of his work and home computers, police found very damning search history topics. Asking about how
wife.
Much... close. He was... Googling How much arsenic is needed to kill somebody?
Oh, Jesus.
As well as what poisons were undetectable. He was watching YouTube videos on how to make your own poison and what deadly plants could poison someone.
Jesus.
One of the plants mentioned was oleander, which is a flower, and the poison associated with it is oleandrin. Not only did he purchase cyanide, but his computer history showed that he had also bought oleandrin and arsenic, although he never received the oleandrin. So apparently he shopped at a bad website and it was just, they just took his money. Jim Craig's trial began in July 2025, but it wasn't just for the murder of his wife, Angela. There had been more charges added after his arrest because Jim was not behaving himself while he sat in prison awaiting his trial. It had been discovered that he had attempted to hire someone to murder the detective in charge of the case.
Jesus.
Additionally, he was trying to pay for strangers to not only testify that they knew Angela and that she wanted to commit suicide, but he also wanted to create, he wanted to pay somebody to create a deep fake video of her saying that she was suicidal.
What the fuck?
I know. There were also some discussions in some of the sources that I read saying that he tried to get one of their daughters to tamper with some of the evidence. After 2 days of deliberation, Jim was found guilty of the murder of Angela, solicitation to tamper with evidence, solicitation to commit perjury, and solicitation of murder in regards to the police detective. He was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole and was given an additional 33 years, I believe, for all those additional charges with the solicitation.
What a weird case.
I know. Wild. Wild.
Super weird. You have a chaser for us?
I do have a chaser. It is a watch recommendation for a show on HBO called Task. And it's
FBI. Robert Buffalo or whatever his name
you
is?
You mean Mark Ruffalo?
Mark Ruffalo. Yeah.
Close. Buffalo, same thing.
Close enough.
Yes. He is an FBI agent and heads a task force who's looking into a group that has been stealing from drug houses and making off with the money, and a kid disappears, and it's a really good show. It's really good.
I added it to my watch list, but Netflix just added Model Citizen to their movie list.
Yeah.
So I've watched that 2 times in the past couple of days, but it's one of my
Task is a show, and it hasn't completed yet. We're still in the middle of the season. I think we've got 2 more episodes coming out. So if you want to wait and binge it, yeah. I think at the end of the month it's done.
Distracted when like with Dark Horse. I got distracted with that.
Yeah.
Cause I started watching when it was like 4 episodes were out, but
right.
My chaser.
What's your chaser? Something good, I'm sure.
I didn't think about it. Matt McCusker has a new Netflix special called Humble Offering. That one's pretty funny.
Nice.
Model Citizen. Watch that if you haven't watched it. I'm just going through
all the stuff you've watched recently.
Yeah.
Nice.
Dark Horse. Dark Horse was good. The second season of Terminal List. It was kind of confusing. I liked the first season better.
I agree. The next book in the Terminal List series, I was listening to a podcast with the author, and that's going to be coming out soon. Sounds like that's going to be coming out pretty soon.
I didn't like the new season. The last.
Well, it's the prequel. It's the prequel. You don't have to watch one to know what's happening. Actually, they don't even really. I mean, there's a few characters that correlate, but that's about it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good watch. I don't really have a real chaser. I'm just throwing things that I just watched recently. Thanks for watching or listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Love you, bud.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.